I'm talking about multi-million dollar businesses. I can't tell you how many businesses and people we work with that they think they're a brand, right? They think they're this big, legit business, and they have an intern that works for them. And then while that intern's working for them, they create the Facebook page, they create the Instagram page. And what happens when the internship's done?
Yeah.
They go away. Because think about it, in your world, if you couldn't run ads.
Yeah. No.
Come on. God.
Yeah, what were
you talking about? Optimization. Like, he was on it. Matt was killing the nuggets over here, man. Like, he was dropping like the 12 pack, and then like all of a sudden it just stopped.
Oh, that's because you said hit record.
You hit record and busted.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
He was spitting numbers too, man. 80%, 20%, 15%.
Well, no, okay. So
19%.
You were talking about it as far as, you know, repeat customers and having that many repeat customers. You know, a client was saying, oh, they have 80%.
Yeah,
repeat.
We have an 83% return customer rate. And they were saying it almost bragging. And I'm like, yeah, that's good. That means your customers are happy. But that means you have exponential room to
You're not sending enough traffic.
Media.
That's what tells me is there's not enough people.
Yeah, I said, all right, if 80% of your customers are returning, how much does it cost you to get a customer? And they're like, oh, around $70 or $80. And she's like, that's too expensive. I said, well, hang on a minute. If 8 out of 10 of your customers come back and buy again, that means that 8 out of 10 of those sales are going to buy again without you having to buy that again, right? And she goes, yeah. And I said, all right, how often are they coming back? She said, about every 90 days. I said, okay, so then you basically have to figure out how much you can spend for the next 90 days, even go backwards, knowing that those customers, on average, 8 out of 10 of them,
the lifetime value
within
of the
90
customer.
Days. And so I had her, and we were doing this right live, and I said, all right, now what's your average customer? How many times your average customer returned? And she had customers with like 30 visits or 30 buys, 40 buys.
Holy cow.
It was ridiculous. Yeah, she's been in business 23 years. And so it was like these people, when they bought, they came back again and again and again and bought again and again. I'm like, there is no way that you could convince me that you can't spend your max budget 90 days straight. And for that 90 days, it's going to look like you're losing money.
Yep.
But 90 days and ahead, you're going to start gaining that back. Probably another 90 days for the pendulum to swing. And then you're going to be like, I'm in, I'm going to spend as much as I can.
Yep.
And so she still struggled with it. So I literally went and met with her for lunch, and we sat down, and I got her to hire an ad agency because she had always been running her own ads.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, 2 years later, she's literally 3 or 4X bigger as a business because she's not proud of 80% customer return
rate.
Yeah,
that's not good. Yeah.
She's proud of how much her customers come back over and over and over. And she's trying to get as many of them in that cycle as possible.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, if it's too high, then that means you should be sending more traffic.
Yes.
If it's too low, then, you know.
What's a good medium? What's a good medium for?
I usually say around 20 to 25% is a good, healthy spot if you're buying good media.
Yeah. And we're like 30 to 35.
Yeah, you're above average with your numbers just because you... I mean, you have an ideal situation where you literally did do every single thing you could for every single customer. And do I believe that that's possible for everybody? Yes. But is everybody going to do it? They're not.
Yeah.
So if you want a great business and a healthy brand, you'll do exactly what David did. And David and I, early on, like 7 years ago, I'm like, oh my God, you can grow so much faster. And he's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, but you can do this. And he'd be like, yeah, I know.
Like, well, you know.
So and, like and that so, first story you told us, was David the lady?
No.
But David the lady? David?
Yeah, no, but and, definitely.
And so, but then like a year later, I told him, I'm like, hey, like I will fully admit, like, you were right, I was wrong. Like, what you're doing is absolutely crazy good as a brand, and the way that you're building it matters. And it's
slow
way more than
steady.
Just making more sales.
Slow
and so that's helped me. That helped me in my journey because I was really good at getting people a lot of growth. But you could get
sustained
a lot of growth and then fall apart.
Yeah.
Or we
and
could,
too much growth is it can yeah, break you. I mean,
it does. It breaks your supply chain.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you peak up, you scale up for it, and then when those sales aren't there, now you've got this massive overhead you got to fulfill and go forward with.
Exactly.
It.
Exactly.
So, I mean, working with other smart people has made me more mature too, just because you realize you're getting all these different sales are important. They're the most important thing, but the volume of sales and what you can actually handle, you can create a problem.
Absolutely. Yep. Slow and steady. You know, I
think did you ever break above 30%? Do you use that metric at all to gauge ad spend or customer acquisition?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we look at new customer, you know, revenue each, or new, how many new customers we're bringing in each day, and base, you know, new customer revenue off of what we can spend on ads. So,
I mean, would you say that is one of your most important metrics that you kind of follow on a regular? Is that? Or?
No, I mean, that's not what that's what our ad, you know, our ad team is.
I think
is
revenue
following
per
that.
User.
Yeah, but you know, for me, you know, overall metrics, the MER, you know, the marketing efficiency, and you know what we're spending a day versus what we're pulling in, and that tells us, you know, where we are profitability wise.
Yeah, if you look at your revenue per user as a trend, if that's not going up, you're going to struggle. So you either need to convert more, so your revenue per user goes up, or you need to add more to your average order value, convert higher, etc. Continue,
and then each one of those things he's talking about is a whole strategy.
Marketing,
yeah. Convert more, like,
yeah.
Awesome.
And we could go down those rabbit holes, but that's
pretty cool though.
Yeah, for me, I love data because I just feel like data doesn't lie. Mm-mm. And my thing I've always said is let people vote for your business with their wallet. So if they're buying your stuff, then they're voting that you did a good job. And if they're not, then you're just not providing value. And you have to be humble enough to say, okay, maybe I don't have it right. I have it right for me, but I don't have it right for the person that wants to come spend money with me. And so I need to improve that conversation with that person so that they know, like, and trust me.
Absolutely.
That's it, man. That's another nugget.
Nugget of the day.
Matt's the nugget king. How many nuggets you got? Two? Got two nuggets?
Yeah.
One nugget.
All right, we'll see you next week.
That's it. Dude, that was killer.
I don't know.
That was awesome.
I could speak to something of the sourcing. You could speak of like the brand identity and like...
Yeah, what are the things... this is one of the things like we deal with like with so much with people in is like, okay, I have a brand. I have a name. Okay, what's the name? Like even now we're talking about like, okay, what's the name? Mm-hmm. Is the name available? You know, is the name available?
To see if
like,
is
this something you want to sell local? Is this something you want to do regional? Is this something you want to run like country? Like having the mindset early on of like where you're taking it.
And I would push back on someone that said that I have a brand. No, you don't. You have an idea.
You have an idea.
So that's just the truth. And as long as you think it's a brand,
I have a product. Maybe
you're literally going to be looking
at
it.
Product. You don't have a brand.
Yeah. You've already pre-sold yourself, and that's going to make your journey that much harder.
Yep.
Because you think that you know. And so you don't have a brand. What creates a brand is sales.
Yep.
If you don't have any sales, you have no brand. Like David has a belt and buckle company. And because so many people have bought it, now they know that brand. And so the more sales that you make, the closer you are to having a brand. Yep. You don't have a brand.
Taking ideas to brands. Sales.
And there's so many like, you know, it's like our belt on Amazon is a dime a dozen. But like what makes somebody want ours over the one that's $12 that looks exactly like, and may even be from the same manufacturer.
Good.
You know what I mean? Like they have copied our classic buckle to a T, and I swear it's probably the same. It's the same exact design. But anyway, that's a whole other show. But, you know, but so what makes them want to spend $49.99 versus $20, you know, and people ask me all the time, like, well, and there's so many things from it's, you know, the quality is, you know, different. That's, you know, the leather and all that and the customer
lifetime
service.
Lifetime warranty and the customer
and those
service.
Are things, but that's what makes our belt a brand. And there's just, you know, on Amazon and they sell it to you. And if you don't like it, yeah, you can deal with Amazon, but you can never get a hold of that company. Like right. You'll never speak with anyone at the company. No. You definitely won't call and speak with the owner. And, you know, so that's the difference in a brand and just a product.
There's a lot of stuff like you guys are very advanced with things like the thoughts and like even on a lot of people, they don't even know which platforms to create like and how to do that properly. And that we don't have to get into how to do all like how to properly create a platform. But I can't tell you how many businesses and people we work with that they think they're a brand, right? They think they're this big, legit business and they have an intern that works for them. And then while that intern's working for them, they create the Facebook page, they create the Instagram page. And what happens when the internship's done?
Yeah.
They go away. And who now owns the platform?
It's still in there, Facebook.
It's the intern.
Have you guys run into that? We're like,
do I run into it
all the time?
Look, I'm talking about multi-million.
Like, I don't know who has our Facebook,
dude. I'm talking about multi-million dollar businesses. I'm not talking about the mom and pop shop.
Page is run by.
Don't even know how to get to it. We had a company. No joke. We had a company in Florida reach out to us to want to run digital ads with us. Want to spend $10,000 a week doing these stuff because we do a lot for a medical company here. A medical company. A medical company here, right? And so the medical company here has, you know, the one has scaled crazy. They've gone crazy, right? So like, well, how are you doing this? What are you doing? We're like, well, this is who we use. Well, can they help us too? Like, sure. So we take the phone call, go through the phone call. The guy calls up, more money than God, right? And it's like, I was like, cool. So I started asking the simple questions. Well, okay, well, where's your Facebook page at? Well, what do you mean? Like, well, who owns your Facebook page? If you know, the ads manager, do you have an ads manager? Well, what's that?
Yeah. Yeah. Same with,
what's that? What do you mean? What's that? Like, well, how you run ads? Well, we just pay this company and they're running the ads.
Yeah,
and
I'm
like,
their platform.
Well, not even that. But so, I was like, well, where are they? So then that's the next question. Okay, cool. They're like, so they're saying they're running the ads, but nothing's converting. I'm like, okay, well, where are they pointing them to? Oh, this landing page. Like, do you have the landing page? And I get it, it's like some random URL. I mean, like, so this is a medical company. You and I know who this type of business is.
Yeah, yeah.
This is all like federally regulated.
Yeah.
Like, it like has to be right.
Yeah.
And everything about it is wrong. Everything about it, truthfully, is it's illegal. You can't do it this way.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, first off, I can't take the money because I'm not going to jail. Like, I'm not doing this and like sinking my whole business over this. Yeah. He's like, what do you mean? It's like, your stuff's wrong. Everything about it's wrong. What do you mean? Well, you need to have an ads manager. I was like, who owns the account? Well, you know, we hired this agency out in Colorado that set it up. Cool. Yeah. Well, let's reach out to them. So we reach out to them. They don't know who owns it. They've created a business manager that owns the asset on Facebook that is this business with 8 to 10 different sites, medical sites, and they don't know who owns it.
They're like, we don't know. I guess whoever has the password.
Long story short, this is crazy. This story you wouldn't believe it unless it was real. So we go through this whole ordeal, right? Going through this whole process of trying to find out who it is. And sometimes you can go into the history and you can look at the last person on there and then when the ad manager was created and all that, right? Yeah, yeah. So last person on there is an account rep for that company. I was like, look, the best I can tell is the account rep for the agency is the one that maybe created this.
Personal Facebook.
What happens is you have the business down there, this medical company, and they want to run advertisements. So they hire an agency that creates an ad manager specifically. They create an ads manager or business manager for the medical company. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't happen that way ever.
Right.
So now that the business manager owns the Facebook page of this medical company.
Yep.
And so this is the way it's structured. And so you should always have two admins on the account. So if someone bails, it's not just abandoned. So they don't know who the admin is on the account that owns the business manager that owns the Facebook pages for this multi-site place. Right. And so long story short, like we go through months and months and months back and forth, and there's just no way to legally do this. And the girl that was the last person on the account for it removes herself. Like, so the last hope of not having to go through submitting all this paperwork and just the nightmare that Meta is for trying to get your stuff back. They've gotten a little bit better now because you can go in and say, you know, detach from the business manager. And then after 14 days or plus, you can then claim it back. This wasn't the case then. And so she bails out. I'm like, why'd you bail out? Well, I'm like, you're like the only person that had access to the page. Now no one has access to the page.
She's like removed herself.
She removed herself. So she was from the eight agency, we'll call it Partners. She was from this agency, this large agency created this business manager called Partners that then owned the asset. And she was the only one that had access through the asset to the Facebook page. That's crazy. She's gone. So now to this day... this multi-million dollar company, mostly what they'll end up doing is just creating duplicate Facebook pages, which causes even more confusion.
Right.
It just destroys your NAP, name, address, phone number for all your SEO, all your community. Like, it just is terrible. And so if you're a business out there and you're starting and you're trying to think about this advertisement world and this content creation world, there's two things you can do. Either get really educated on how to properly structure a business on Facebook or hire an agency that knows what the crap they're doing and have them create it. And let them make it for you. Always tell the clients when they come in, look, it'll be the best money you ever spend if you let us create the platform for you because you can sue me. You're not going to sue the kid that leaves to go back to college.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if I build it, you can sue me and I can give it right back to you. Mm-hmm. Like I don't want it and you can have it and it'll be done right. And now your business is designed to grow. Like we're not spending whatever. So I really feel like there's a world out there for budding entrepreneurs or brand building people that even in the basics of creating the platform and doing it properly, do that first. Because think about it, in your world, if you couldn't run ads.
Yeah. No.
Come on.
No. Or if you're Facebook, all of a sudden you lose access.
Yes.
So that happened to us where, you know, I had lost access and yeah. And so it's a nightmare where, you know, if for whatever reason you can't access that account anymore. I mean, luckily, you know, everybody like the ad manager still had it, but for me, for commenting, and it was like,
stuck.
Yeah.
Two majors with the building a Facebook business manager to own your Facebook page for your business is it's designed for privacy things, man. It's designed to protect your tool and your business. Like your Facebook page is so valuable now and all the bad out there know that. Mm-hmm. Right. So always have two admins on there and always have two. The thing about the business manager is so great is like anybody that touches your page, you can require they have two-factor authentication or they can't touch your asset. Because think about this, like if you give them access, admin access to your page and they don't have two-factor authentication and you're running ads through that platform and that thing gets hacked. Can you imagine your ad platform getting hacked?
No, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like what's the cost and loss on that?
Yeah.
So I've found recently that a business Facebook page is way less valuable than a personal page. Like you can run ads. Mm-hmm. It feels like people are no longer, they don't go to the business brand page, but they go to like the owner's page, the person behind it a lot of times.
Yeah, I think, and I think Facebook really as a whole, like is anything business, you can see it in posts, right? Like if you go to, we can make the coolest video ever. If we put it on our business page, it
gets like 7 likes.
12 people see it, right?
You put it on your personal.
Because they want you to spend money. They want you to spend money to reach your audience, this so-called your other audience. But if you take that same piece of content, like you said, and you put it on your personal page,
it
goes.
Yeah. Well, you'll get 7, but.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that that use personal pages for business, but you are limited by the number of followers and some other things with that. And if you're a small person that never expects to be big, that is perfectly fine. But if you plan on running advertisements in a big way, they're calculating stuff. You gotta do it. What'd you say to me? Did Matt throw at me? What'd he say?
Yeah. You said you get 12 when you put it on your business page. I said, when you put it on, you go,
it's me.
When I put it on my personal page, I get a lot more. I said, like 7.
Like 7, 13. Nah. I don't, do you use Facebook often?
No. No, not near as much as I should.
So this is the funny thing about Facebook. Dude, no one uses it, but it's an advertisement platform.
I will say one of the things that I'm working on this year is starting to do that because that's always been hard for me. Like I don't like to talk about myself. I don't like to tell everybody what I'm doing, whatever. That just has never been me. But now that our business shifted as far as like who is the forward facing, me not doing that for the last year is certainly makes a difference.
Yeah. That mug's got to be out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's part of it. It's part of it.
How about you, David? Use Facebook?
Yeah. I use it. I don't really put a whole lot out there. I look and get entertainment and,
A stalker.
He's a stalker, dude.
But, I used to be much more, kind of, hey, this is, this was my lunch today kind of, post. Yeah, but
it's all food things.
Yeah, but not as much anymore. But we've been on Facebook as a brand since, I remember, ever since we could, but I was on Facebook when you had to have a college ID a college email to sign up. So you had to have the .edu. Sign up. Yeah. So that was, and I remember when ECU, got it and it was .edu, and we signed up. And so I was on that personally, ever since the beginning. And then as soon as we started the business, I started a Facebook page. You could look back. It's probably I think I started our business Facebook page in 2011, maybe something like that. And then as soon as Instagram hit, I started one for our Instagram as well. So, we've been on there from the very beginning, as far as business, but.
It's cool. And yeah, Instagram, I remember sitting on the couch hearing can you believe he's going to spend $1 billion for Instagram? And everybody freaked out about that.
Yeah. And I remember I was using Instagram before Facebook had bought it, obviously. But I thought it was awesome. It was really, at the time, it was really cool.
It was one of the smartest decisions ever. And then bought WhatsApp and then Or after a while, they're like, okay, you can keep buying every company.
Yeah, yeah, every company. We're going to stop.
Yeah.
Do you think Facebook will be viable? Like, as you hear it all the time, like, at least I hear it all the time, like, oh, Facebook's for the older demo. Like, mm-hmm. It's the older demo. Like, the younger demo is like Parker and the like team. Like, they don't use that. You know, they're mm-hmm. very heavy on Instagram and things like that.
Yeah.
At what age do you think that team will like reinvent the platform a bit or it'll age out?
That's really tough. I mean, I think that it eventually will age out.
Do you really?
I do. I mean, I think that you're eventually going to get to where, you know, a generation that isn't on it starts to become old enough where the generations that are on it now, the grandparents and not that there's plenty, not just yeah, grandparents on it.
There are a lot of grandparents.
But but that's what kind of you would think is the oldest generation on it. Once, you know, they start, you know, to move on and there's a, you know, it just kind of keeps moving up, but eventually that younger generation that's not on it now, they're not going to just start to get on it once they, yeah, you know, have, and you know, maybe they will. Once you have kids, you start sharing with your parents more. And that's what a lot of my friends, they say, well, I post on there so that my parents get to see my kids and stuff, you know, and they get to see what I'm up to. And that's kind of how they keep in touch. And so I don't know, maybe, you know, a generation like that will kind of come along and use that for that kind of purpose. But I think that you may see where, you know, they just never had any interest in it to begin with. And so they start losing users over time.
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting too, because Facebook is an ads platform. Like, it really is that, like, mm-hmm, ads platform. That's where their revenue comes from, all the money. So it'll be interesting to see buying patterns of the younger generations as they come up, if Facebook doesn't adapt to those buying patterns and, mm-hmm, and so forth. And I think you saw that a little bit in the algorithm, like when everybody got ticked off on Instagram when they changed the algorithm from like photo based to mm-hmm, like this reels, and it was a straight fight with TikTok, right? Mm-hmm. So TikTok came out, and I'll just say, like, the best algorithm in the world if you ever want to lose your life. Like, you'll just sit there going all day because
they know exactly
so
what you want to see.
Man, yeah, it's so good, right? Yeah. But Zuck and team was like, nah, let's watch this. So it gave a lot of people a whiplash really quickly on Instagram, because all of a sudden we went from having valuable imagery, and this is how we communicate with our followers and everything else, and then even on brand influencers, right? And to, that's gone. Like, mm-hmm, now I've got to make videos. I've got to make reels, and I've got to do five of them a day.
Real quick.
And, you know, I've got to do like tons of these things and stuff. And if you're thinking about that with buying power, like the trends of like the younger demographics growing up, coming through, they're going to be the people buying the houses and the cars and mm-hmm, all this other stuff. Like, what does that look like? And what does that look like on a platform like Facebook? If we've all been traditionally spending a lot of money there to acquire business and stuff, at what point do we start testing those other markets?
Our audience is no longer on Facebook.
Really?
Not at all.
Yeah.
So like, we, up until the pandemic, we could always run ads and make Facebook work. Since the pandemic, I bet you we've lost 50 grand. Like, just literally cannot get that to work, no matter what. So everything that we do now is on Google and YouTube.
Have you started anything on TikTok yet?
We haven't.
But if you think about it, our audience is looking to get educated.
Yeah.
You don't go to Facebook to get educated.
No.
You go to Google and YouTube and stuff like that. And so that's really where our audience is.
Your previous conversations earlier, you're talking about the guy that was like one of the highest spending ad guys.
Number
on
one in the world.
I would be the conversation with him would have had to be so interesting, because we've done some ads on TikTok, right?
I'll bring him on. Like 100%, we'll bring him on.
It'd be really interesting to hear his data on it, because like I call a little bit of BS on TikTok ads. You know what I mean? Like, and I mm-hmm, don't know. It could be we doing it wrong, right? But a little of the BS on TikTok ads, because they usually typically really, really well, like according to their metrics.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then you go back into like the analytics and start tracking through, like, this is like not really connecting here. So how much of like of these things on any ad platform, even Facebook, between like what you see in their side versus your analytics and stuff is real? How much of it is bot-based?
Well, that's why I focus on the MER, you know, so the marketing efficiency ratio. So I
don't
you know, of course
it.
You have to use what Facebook's telling you to, you know, to judge things and how successful stuff is, because there's, you know, other things that you're doing that is driving revenue. So it can't just be that. But if most, you know, 90% of your marketing budget is going towards, you know, a certain platform, then look at your overall marketing spend versus your overall revenue and see if you're making money.
You're in a business though that like that's really easy to calculate because you're selling a product.
Yeah.
You can transfer that through.
Yeah.
But like say for like all the other businesses out there, whether they're service based or whatever, right? They're not necessarily selling that direct product from it. So because they're more of that brand awareness and
six phone calls
yeah
to close a deal. Well, the first phone call came from the ad, but
yeah,
six phone calls later, you have no idea yeah. where.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like trying to find the, what platform is valuable? Like, is that TikTok valuable? Like, how many times do I have to hit them there for that to really come in? And you see the same thing on the side of influencers, right? Like YouTube influencers, like, you know, everybody says that's the true audience. Like if you mm-hmm. have a YouTube guy, because people follow him in a big way, TikTok, I don't think is really there, but it's just the algorithms, yeah. like you might be there today and tomorrow you're not. So there's not exactly. that like true, like I've got to get my David feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't use it. He doesn't use it to sell products.
Yeah.
He actually uses it to drive clicks to something.
That's what the guy that you, yeah, you're talking about.
So it's not.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
It's not like, hey, I'm going to run $100 in TikTok ads and get.
That makes perfect sense.
And make a certain amount of money. He just, it's to get the click.
It's literally arbitrage.
But see, like in that philosophy makes, that's brilliant. Like that's brilliant sense. Yeah, that's what that is.
Now you're taking clicks for pennies and turning them into, you know, much, much, much larger revenue. And obviously he's at a whole different level than I've ever imagined.
Yeah.
Now getting to hang out with them, I'm sure I'll get there, yeah. but yeah.
And then it'll be cool to see what happens with Twitter. And the only reason I'm bringing these things up, because I think these are all things.
He's like, shaking everything
but
up.
But everybody in the brand needs to be thinking about these things. Yeah. Like if you're building where you're at low key and you're moving up and
your
like
your audience is on Twitter.
Yeah, no joke.
100%.
I believe that too. Yeah.
The 40 to 60-year-old dude that's conservative.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100, we're not recording, are we?
Oh yeah.
Oh, are we? Oh, okay.
Totally.
Yeah. So 100%.
Yeah, and I've definitely thought about Twitter. You know, in hearing, you know, other operators talk about you know, advertising on Twitter and being there. I've definitely thought about doing more on there. But I, you know, what you mentioned, you know, with Twitter, and I wonder, you know, how much he's going to shake things up with with creator revenue and really wants to get big on creator revenue.
He's two steps ahead of everyone else. Dude, I don't care what you say. Go watch Tesla AI Day.
Yeah,
it's a 45-minute to hour-long thing.
Whole conversation.
When you watch that 1 hour of TV, you're gonna go, okay, like there's not another person on the planet that should bet against him. Like,
yeah,
it looks dumb what he's doing right now because it goes back to you set your goals.
He's already at the end, man.
You set your goals from who you are right now for where you're gonna go, and then when you get there, you're like, oh, well, I set it for who I was now. He's like three steps ahead of you. And, you know, everybody's looking at Tesla as a car company. Tesla is not a car
company.
It's a data company.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. And when he shows you what he's mapping and why he's the first person on the planet to own a quantum computer, like, there's a reason why.
Wild.
Like, he is so far ahead of what. Yeah.
Yeah, for advertising, I think it's going to be super cool because that changes the way we make content too. Like, so how we make content, where we make all of that stuff changes so fast.
And right now it's going to be cheap to advertise there.
Yeah, he wants it.
He will give it to you cheap. I believe that anyone who's not looking at Twitter right now for the next 2 years, I think it'll be the next 2 years are going to be like the old Facebook of when it first started.
And he's called Zuckerberg out on it. Not just like the fist fight thing, but he's called him out. He's like, you know, when he did Threads,
he's doing it.
When he did Threads, he goes, all right, now this is personal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And like,
I think so.
Game
too.
Over. Like, I don't know if I kicked that one. So I think he's doing cool stuff for creators to bring people there to make content and pull it in.
That's what's going to be interesting is the creator side.
And Threads on Instagram died like that fast.
Yeah.
So like,
we all created our handle there because, you got to create the handle.
Well,
you're like, I'm not going over there. Like,
then look at what he did though. Yeah. He even made Twitter open source so that they can make it better, faster. It's he has,
what?
That guy has no scarcity mindset whatsoever.
No.
For anything.
Yeah. It's like Google Plus. Remember Google Plus?
Yeah.
That's what Threads will be.
Yeah.
Threads will be Google Plus.
Oh man. Are those wild horses over there?
Yeah. You see the wild. Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of them came out. That's
there's,
awesome.
There's dolphins too. This is an amazing space.
Yeah.
Cool stuff. Yeah. You got.
We literally have podcast. Wild horses.
Yeah. When do the dolphins come out?
Out the window. We'll need to get some B-roll.
Yeah. Anyways, hopefully that was interesting.
Yeah.
It's definitely something we deal with all the time though. I mean, it's one of those pain points. It's just like you hate it, but most people aren't as organized and process based as a lot of us, or I'm not even, I try to be as process based as I can be, but, for most people, they have ideas, right? Like you said, it's not a brand, it's an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have a decent idea, what are some things you should be thinking about before that idea actually turns into something that you're going to make money off of? And, you've got to build a foundation before you start saying, hey, how come my website's not clicking?
Yeah. And the other thing that I want people to realize too, we called it building a brand, not like what you are if you are a brand. Yeah. It's like, to build a brand, we're going to talk about all the things that it took to get there. We're not only going to talk to brands that are already established, because then, like, where's the journey?
Where is the journey?
Absolutely.
Where'd the journey start for you? Like,
was it a glimmer in my father's eye?
Yeah. So really, I mean, did you have an idea of being an entrepreneur, or was it more of a, like, you thought the job was away, and then when your dad said, "Hey, I have this idea, and you're part of it"?
No, I mean, you know, I really didn't know what I was going to do. You know, going to college, and you know, I was a communications major, and it's funny how all those things really have helped me along my journey now. But you know, my father was always an entrepreneur, and he had always had his own businesses. So, you know, growing up, my parents always owned their own businesses. So, you know, I kind of felt like I would maybe own my own business, but I didn't know what that was going to be.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I really had no idea. I was going to college. I was getting out of college and was like, you know, this is what I'm supposed to do. And then I'll figure it out. But when he gave me that idea, you know, or when he said, "Hey, I have this idea of a belt company," and I loved brands, you know, and even as a kid, yeah, you know, loved brands. And like I said, you know, I would trace the logos of skateboard companies, you know, and stuff like that. And I just loved the identities of brands. So when he brought that opportunity to build something and to build a brand, I jumped at it, and I was like, you know what, this could be really cool. And I just loved the process of building something that was mine, and, you know, that I could really put my mark on, and then eventually see people wearing it, you know, and see people, you know, enjoying that brand that I built and loving it too, you know. So that's really what,
how about you,
know,
man?
What I'm passionate about.
Like, how did this thing start for you? Like, when did you think you were maybe good at it? And like, and what was that learning process for you of like, did you start doing this same stuff, and have you been in that same vertical the whole time? Or are you doing other things that kind of really, you're like, this is where I should be, and this is what I should be doing, this is what I'm good at?
I actually started my very first company when I was 18, when I graduated. I bought the business of the guy that I was working for, and then grew that. But that was more of a, like, figure out who I am.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think where it really, I knew that I didn't, I guess I thought I was smarter than what I really was. So like, when I was working for them, I always thought like, oh, I have ideas. And if they didn't want to implement them, I always thought like, oh, well, we're struggling for no reason. And so the business, like, I was 18 years old. The first year that I bought it, we did like $49,000. This is back in 1989. I was like, yeah, okay, I did good.
Houses were 70,000.
Yeah, and but that
pretty good,
that
actually.
That was a gross number, though. Yeah. That wasn't profit. It's still, as a person that just graduated, that was good. The second year, I did 141,000. The third year, I did 400 grand. The fourth year, I went over a million.
That's big.
And so I, in my head, like, I thought, like, I know exactly what I'm doing. I know exactly how this is supposed to work. Everything I do is going to be that amazing. And then
I'm great.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, I'm great.
And then you realize, like, through failure and dumb decisions that, oh, okay, maybe you got struck by lightning and it was a good run, but like, there is a grind to it. Like, as soon as you think that you've made it,
yeah,
you're done learning. If you think you know
next,
then you're no longer curious. You're no longer learning. And so I really did make a commitment to always just be curious and look at what other people are doing, and to always try to be uncomfortable. And the only way that I ever saw to do that was to go spend time with people that were doing better than me. And as I did that, that's just kind of how my journey evolved to then building out a concrete business and selling that. And then I went to a Tony Robbins event, learned about online, which is crazy. I was like, oh my God, like, people are using the web to do stuff besides interwebs? Send email.
Yeah.
You know, 'cause that's all I'd done. We were pouring concrete, and we would use it for email and like FTP of like blueprints, and never bought a single thing online ever. I hadn't.
No.
And I go to a Tony Robbins event, and he has this series called DVD Money Masters. Mm. And the first one I get is from Frank Kern, talking about selling eBooks on how to train your parrot. I'm like, oh my God, like you could literally sell people this book and it doesn't matter what the weather is. For me, yeah, when it was raining, I didn't make any money. Yeah, when it was winter, it was
about like, what the weather is.
Yeah, like you can't, this is amazing. You can't go pour concrete. And yeah. So I was like, oh, I'm going to do this. And so I literally said, when I left there, there was two other people I met. I said, in 5 years, I will be online. Like I will be online instead of what I was. And it was almost 5 years to the month that it took me to transition out of the businesses that I had, because I had the concrete business and two salons, to have those sold and be 100% online.
And in 5 years, that's a long time. Like, it wasn't overnight. You didn't just do it the next day. I mean, it took 5 years.
5 years. And then I think it really took me another 5 years to figure that out, because it was like, I was really good at Facebook ads. And so I made a lot of money early, and then Facebook just kept changing. I'm like, no matter what, like there's no way to ever get ahead of this. And so what I did, I actually spent $1,000 with a guy to teach me Google Analytics for 6 weeks. And so we'd get on a call once a week, and he would go through my data from my e-commerce store and help me understand it. And every time I looked at it, I was like, oh my goodness, like if I change this and I go fix that on my site, my ads work better. Oh, do it again. Oh, my ads are more consistent. Oh, everybody and their brother was always talking about how to run Facebook ads and do this and do that. And I'm like, guys, like traffic's not the problem.
No.
Like you have 100 visitors come into your site. You're converting one.
Yeah, that's not good.
You know,
yeah.
You got,
and it's still
not good.
But you know what is good is converting four.
Yeah.
But that seems crazy that even at only converting four,
right.
That's really good.
Good.
Yeah. That's a hundred people walking your store. You convert four, and you are crushing it.
Yes.
Yeah.
One, no, you're not. But four, but that's crazy that it's still. And I think people have to realize that'd be a 4% conversion
two,
rate.
You start,
which
you,
is really,
you
start really high.
Making money. Three. You go, oh, wow, now my net profit is way better. Four, you're like, I actually have...
You're killing it.
I have room to go ahead and test and do other things because of the revenue. And if you think about it, why I say traffic's not your problem, if you're converting at one or two and 98 people left, everybody else is going, hey, buy ads, do this, create this content, get another 100 visitors. I'm like... Why don't you just find two more of the ones that are already there?
Yeah.
Came
and convince them.
And you doubled your business.
Sell two guys in the restaurant a couple of desserts.
And then when you go do content, you're getting 4 out of 100 where your competitors are getting 1 and 2, and you just crush them.
Yep.
That's awesome. All from concrete.
Yeah. Doing numbers in your head all day long. Slabs at 6 inches or 4 inches is you're doing numbers constantly.
Dude, my whole journey started on a lawnmower. Like, so funny, we're both in these like manual labor things.
Yeah, service.
So I like last night we saw the guy that was in a car accident that actually bought the landscape company from me. Yeah. Like I was talking like the old girl, the truck's finally dead. Like this is a truck when I sold it had 230 something.
Landscape
thousand.
Company that I bought from the guy that I worked for at 18. No
dude,
wonder.
Yeah. So like well, I did that forever, man, and I just remember like this is I remember doing it. And it was like a means to the now. Right. Like I knew like you had to eat, you had to pay bills, like a means to the now. But I always wanted to do this creative thing. Right. Like I always had that. But I didn't know how to get there. Like I didn't know how to get to that because money, you had to have money by camera.
Exactly.
And so I remember one day just like sitting on that lawnmower, riding it, like as silly as it sounds, is like, this isn't proprietary. You know, nothing about this is proprietary. Like I'm competing with a guy that like can just go do whatever. And like he can tomorrow he's with me. I said, but like ideas are proprietary, like having the ability to think outside the box for things. And then if you can make that in a video or create it, then that's proprietary. And at the time that I decided, like I started buying camera gear and I just started consuming everywhere, like all the YouTube stuff, just going nuts, man. You're just consuming.
Yeah. So I'll give us a brandism right here. From the neck down, we're all worth minimum wage.
Fact.
Truth. So literally the difference is the person that succeeds in the level that they succeed at is from what they know.
Yeah.
And so really part of the reason why we're excited about a podcast is because we're going to get to know more stuff. Fact. And we know that matters.
Absolutely.
Like, I can get someone to dig a hole for minimum wage. Like that's what all that, everything is for. But to actually level up, you need to focus on the 6 inches between your ears.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's what you learn.
It's what you learn.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's crazy. I was like, you know what? This is not proprietary. Like, I don't want to be doing this when I'm old. And so I did. I started buying equipment just slowly. And then I just worked, dude. I like worked nonstop.
But you had to learn nonstop. Something new.
You did. And then this, in the, like you said, you associated with people. So to this day, I talk to this guy, his guy's name's Layton. And he owned a big agency out of Boston. He still does. And so he did this massive just stuff that was so beyond me. And I did this commercial for a neighborhood, and the agency or the developer saw the commercial. Like, this is funny. They said, well, how much, you know, what does it cost to do a commercial? And, we said $600, and they laughed. Like, they just laughed. And we're like, is that good or bad? Like, yeah. I didn't know what to think. Yeah, you know what I mean? Is it good or bad? Like, no, that's good. Yeah. And like, so we did this commercial and they sold crap tons of lots, man. Like they just went nuts. We had drone. It was very early on the drone thing. Uh-huh. So I get obsessive with things, right? So we had the first drones out there and all that other stuff. He knows it's true. And
big
so
3D
I mean,
printer.
I was
wiring
the things and putting GoPros on them, and you could tweak them and up and down, just going nuts on the whole idea. And so I did that commercial, and then that head of marketing was like, you need to get in contact with my agency. It's like, absolutely. So I met this guy named Layton, and Layton's like, yeah, I run an agency. What we do is we do lifestyle photography and videography, and we market and build massive websites for neighborhoods and do all this stuff. And he's like, I'd love to try it out on a shoot. So the first shoot I did with him was in Charlotte. And so I go to Charlotte, and the first time I get there, I brought my drone. Like we had this awesome wood boat, this, what they call those wood boats they make that are just beautiful, Maycraft, right? And so we do the first shot of that with my drone, right? And so this whole shot, the whole shoot, I got paid $1,500 for like 4 days. Like I was making no money, but I knew I didn't care about anything money. I was like, right. If there's an opportunity to learn, I'm there. And so I did this drone, right? And first shot, and it's going, and then it's gone.
God, the drone's gone. He lost the drone.
So there's my profit. Like that's like all of my money. Yeah. I had a $300 GoPro on it, had another $200 gimbal on it, and then it had the drone that was about $1,000. So there went the whole thing. He's like, hey, do you have the footage? I'm like, no, I don't have the footage. It's on that drone. It's in the lake. So that was like my first experience with him. And then we finished up the shoot, and all like the other stuff we did was great. And then so I traveled with him. We went to Austin, Texas, and we went to Florida, and we went all over the place doing these lifestyle shoots. And so I got to put together commercial quality stuff that was used in a big, big way. And I was working alongside some really big photographers. One of the guys' name is Chip Simon, and he's like a renowned photographer that did, I don't know if you remember back in the day, the Nickelodeon, like look all up in your face is like real big and stuff. He did all of that. Like he was the guy that invented that whole look and stuff. So I got to work alongside him and then a couple other really amazing photographers, see how they framed it up and how they did lighting and all that stuff. And that really spurred this whole beginning of like coming back to say this little small town and be
that's
like,
amazing.
This isn't how you do this.
I didn't know. I never knew this.
No, this isn't how you do this. So so to this day, like last year we went up to Boston, Massachusetts, and we did another shoot with him and stuff. And I brought Parker because like, I want you to understand.
So you still interact with him? Or are you
100%,
still working?
100%.
What does he think when you roll up with the reds?
Wow.
Josh,
nice. I hope he never sees this, right? Yeah. I feel like in a lot of ways we've surpassed him. Like we have surpassed him, and like
that's the greatest compliment to someone to teach you is when the student surpasses the master.
Yeah. But we go up there and we shoot, and the thing is, I have shot. Like, it was a learning opportunity for Parker. It was like I've shot with him before, and I know the grind that it is. Like it's a grind, and it's one of those grinds as a creator. One of the hardest things to do is keep your mouth shut. Like just film and keep your mouth shut. Mm-hmm. You're hired for a job and do it. And so that's why I brought Parker, right? It's like, I'm bringing Parker. And I told him, I need him to experience this whole experience. And late, and we would shoot from like 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. I mean, all day. I mean, we're going all day. And I always joke about Leighton. He was like, this guy is like, you'd be shooting in front of a brick wall. And he'd look at him like, I just want less brick wall. I'm like, what do you want me to do? Like he would look at it. It's funny about stuff like that.
Yeah.
But Parker got the experience. Like I wanted him to feel the grind and the tiredness of what it was and doing this all day. And I've done this like forever. Mm-hmm. You know, you do this forever and you be like, even like the day with us, like you were exhausted.
I was so exhausted. I don't know. We shot, you know, for, it was like 4 hours or something, and, you know, and, but it felt like forever. And then the next, I was exhausted. I was so tired the next day. I look at my phone and Josh and they're like at another shoot doing the same.
Every
and I'm
day.
Just like, I'm like, they're animals. Like, I don't know how they do it. Like you got, I was just like, they were just, we just did all this like the day before. And it was like, I'm exhausted. I'm like, my legs were tired. My feet were tired. I was like, I hadn't been on my feet like that long at all. Yeah. For a long time. So what you guys do is amazing.
But it's all like, you know, I'm so grateful for opportunities because like, it's just working and then opportunities and like working with you, like, you know, we've always wanted to do more, but we get to do what we do. And I'm so grateful for that. You know, and you do that. And then I tell you what's so important in life is just being patient. Like, you know, be patient. And like the door opens and you meet people and then like that goes again. And like, just be patient, do what you're supposed to do and be nice to people.
Yep.
Like, and when you do that, it just truthfully happens. And then be extremely obsessive about how good you're getting. Like, mm-hmm. don't ever rest on like, well, that was pretty cool. And we've built a team that like even push me now. Like I'll be like, well, no, that's good enough. Then be like, nah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's a good thing. Like that's a good thing. But yeah, man, it went from riding on a lawnmower, knowing that like, I got to get out of this. This isn't a way to build a living and to build the brand and what we've done today. I say the brand, build our business or what do you want to call it today on the level we have. I never in a million years thought we would build what we build on an annual. And every year it's more, you know, during COVID, we grew our business 35%.
Wow.
Right. Awesome. And so you're like, okay, that was great. But like, is this a one-off? Like, what's my retention? Yeah. You know, like this is great. So the like Nancy's like, that's great. But what's our retention? Dude, in 14 years, I think we've lost 2 clients.
Wow.
You know, so it should be 3 soon. Yeah. But but like, you know, the thing is like you think about that and it's pretty insane because
it is.
This is the truth. Like you could bear to lose some, you know what I mean? There's times like the conversation we had earlier is like when people know you early on in your career, no matter where you're at, whether it's the belt buckle company earlier or what Matt does, when they know you early on and what you are, they never really truly respect what you become.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's in any brand until they get a moment to sit back and be like, if they're humble by like, well, dang. And that's all of us. We can always learn from each other about things. But our first clients are the ones we have the hardest time with saying, this is what you need to do because they think of you when you were, you know, earlier on in your progress. But no, life's pretty awesome. And it all started on a lawnmower. I always attribute like the launch and like opening my eyes to what it could be and how to do was that. And then worked with a bunch of different agencies creating stuff. And I just remember doing stuff for them thinking, this is wrong. Like, you know, and how much time it took to do something, like, this is crazy. And at the time, you know, TV had just become HD. Remember that? Like, TV wasn't HD.
Yeah.
And so DSLRs came out and they shot full HD.
Oh, yeah.
And so I hit that right at the time, you know, like Nancy was working at the television station. So I had a little bit of in there too. And started making TV commercials like crazy, just like crazy. And to this day, like I go look back at like the Google Drive, dude, if we haven't made over 100,000 videos, I'm telling you, like we've made at least 250,000 videos. That's in insane. Our lifetime. It's insane. Wow. It's crazy.
Absolutely amazing. For me, it was really, you know, it was getting laid off. I'd been working on Anson for a long time, for, you know, probably it was 4 years, you know, 5-6 years. And even before then, that was when we went officially and I was doing everything from the customer service to the social to all that. But getting laid off, you know, really that was kind of a, you know, a sink or swim moment for me. And, you know, I remember I actually, you know, in the exit interview telling them that, you know what, this is great. I've been wanting to quit for months. I was like, you know, severance. I was like, and they're like, oh, you're okay with this? And I was like, yeah. I was like, do I get a severance? And they're like, yep, absolutely. I'm like, yeah, then this is great. It's like, you know, my wife told me that, you know, I can't get fired and not to quit. So I'm getting laid off. So this is perfect. And really, you know, made me jump headfirst into it. And really go all in. And that was kind of, you know, my, you know, sink or swim moment.
The challenge is always about what you do at the challenge and where it ends up and like how you deal with that adversity. Right. It's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And no matter what, you're going to deal with the adversity. So I definitely think business for me has been, I love it for one, but it's also been a journey of self-discovery. Cause right when you think that like you've got it figured out, it kicks you right, knocks the wind out of you and you go, oh, okay, there's more to learn. Oh, okay, there's more to learn. And eventually, hopefully through learning that lesson that way a couple of times, you become a little more wise and to start looking at stuff from the perspective of, okay, what is this trying to teach me rather than trying to just keep fighting? Which I think is something that we should convey to people as they try to build a brand. Like, it's good to be obstinate and to be 100% for what you're doing, but also like look at it from like, okay, what am I not seeing? What am I not paying attention to? What is this telling me that, you know, I just am not listening to?